Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend and a whole new month, no less. Happy March to ya. This week, we are going to dive into the world of boarding school, wrongful conviction, and true crime podcasts. Yes, we are talking about the book I Have Some Questions For You by Rebecca Mackay. It was a Nerdette Book Club pick after it came out in March of last year, and it just came out in paperback. And to celebrate, we are going to take a listen to my conversation with Rebecca. The book is about Bodie, who is invited back to the fancy boarding school that she attended to teach a class about podcasting. When Bodie was a student there in the 90s, her former roommate Thalia was murdered, and a boarding school staffer, a black man, was convicted of the crime. Rebecca herself was a day student at a boarding school, and her husband teaches English now at the same school that she attended, which means that she lives on the campus of her high school, which means that she has spent a lot of time thinking about why a boarding school is the perfect setting for some drama.
Yeah, I think one of the things, there's the hothouse element, right? Like everyone kind of trapped together in the woods. Yeah. There's that. I also think there's something really interesting about this kind of permanent, very old place, these buildings that have been there forever, but then this really transitory population coming through, like you're there for 4 years, these really formative years of your life. And college is kind of the same way, but
These are kids. Such children.
Yeah, they're young.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. High school is this fundamentally formative time, and the years after that are a little different. So that contrast between the permanency of the place and this fleeting population where it takes up so much of your memory, but you were really only there for a few years. I just think there's something really juicy in that.
For sure. Well, and I think when you like the hothouse element, especially when you put them all together over the course of 4 years, like a lot can go wrong in some very interesting ways just in terms of plot, right?
Right. Yeah. Obviously, this is in the extreme. Someone has died, but this book is about a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
And the harassment that might go on, especially in the 90s that went on, because we're looking back on 1995 in this book. Mm-hmm. The faculty who, a lot of them are great, some of them aren't. interpersonal stuff with, people who are not fully formed, who are on their own more than most teenagers would be.
Yeah. So I mentioned Bodie's a podcaster. Obviously, we were talking on a podcast. The story could have just as easily taken place with like a journalism course.
Yes.
Why podcasts?
Yeah. It's funny because I started writing the book, started thinking about it like 7 years ago, started writing it 5 years ago. And, podcasts were already a big part of our lives. And I think, when I'm talking about the true crime world, which is what we get into here, like this kind of online community of sleuths who get over-involved in a case like this, podcasting made a lot of sense. And it's, since I started writing it, I think there have been a lot of maybe on the more commercial side, which is fun, mysteries and stuff that do involve
for
podcasts.
Sure. Yeah.
And then it's like, no, I wasn't trying to be part of any broader thing that was going on here. It just made a lot of sense. Podcasting is simply, a new medium that has taken really well to true crime. But of course, the human obsession with true crime goes back to probably, deep human history. You look at like the way murder trials were covered in the 20s, and it was so lurid and sensationalistic. And I keep reminding people, like, they sold souvenirs outside the Lindbergh baby kidnapping trial. Insane. Like, yeah. I mean, that is that you can say, like, we all have a true crime problem or obsession. At least we're not, I mean, for the most part, not doing things like that. Yeah, I think we're a little more responsible. Yeah, but but podcasting is, you know, where a lot of these things have taken off, as well as just Reddit is a big part of the book. Mm-hmm. Twitter is a big part of the book. These are just, I wasn't trying to be super contemporary, but I'm writing a novel set now. I'm just being realist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because often, you know, as a person who has been making a podcast now for almost 10 years, sometimes it can be a deal breaker for me in a story because when it's not well researched, it's like, oh my God, please just stop. You know, there was this one a couple of years ago, I'm not going to name the title, but it was like this woman, I think she was like trying to figure out a cold case that she was, you know, tangentially involved in, but she ended up figuring out who did it and being on the run from that person and still making the podcast. And it was just like, what is happening? It drove me nuts.
Oh God. Well, you know, she had like a portable mic and really good headphones.
Don't justify it, Rebecca.
I have no idea. I've not read the book. Yeah, no, that seems really silly. It's that thing, like one of the reasons I do so much research on anything when I write is like nothing. If you know a topic, nothing takes you out of the book faster than someone getting those details wrong.
Yes. It's such a bummer.
Yeah. For me, one of the things is, you know, I taught elementary school for 12 years. Mm. And when people just get child development stages wrong, like they'll just be wildly off on someone's age. Like there's an 8-year-old bragging that she can count to 100. And you're like, I mean, and not, you know, not a kid with like, you know, different learning skills. Like, it's like, that's not quite right. Yeah. And it just, it's like, okay. And then it kind of burns a hole in the book, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. So you mentioned true crime. I think in a lot of ways, this book is subverting that drama, that the genre. I think about, you know, I mean, this book is about a dead white girl. It's about wrongful convictions and figuring out who did what. It's also really self-aware in a way that I think a lot of true crime isn't.
Right. And this is, you know, one of the things that helps, of course, is I'm not writing true crime. I'm writing fictional crime.
Yeah.
But it does concern the true crime world. This is definitely not just trying to dip into that pool and roll around in it. This is this is really questioning every aspect of, you know, what cases do we get obsessive about? What cases capture the public imagination? Why?
You're taking a sample and putting it in a Petri dish.
Right. And, you know, and then taking a case like that, the project of the book is really to say, okay, let's look at the case where it is the beautiful, young, wealthy girl who dies. Let's look at that. Let's actually take that. You want to talk about that? Let's talk about it. Let's look at it through a hyper-realist lens. How is this attention affecting the case, the witnesses, the family? What is, you know, the underbelly of so much of the, you know, so many of these stories is wrongful incarceration. Mm-hmm. You know, we love a story where it's like, oh, they got the guy and he's been in prison ever since. And, you know, we have this, you know, alarming number of false convictions. That's just the ones that we know for sure are false convictions, right? Mm-hmm. In this country, they disproportionately affect Black men. You want to talk about it? Like, if this is the kind of case we like to talk about it, let's actually talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a lot of what the book is doing.
So you have a couple of really interesting devices in this book. One of them is, well, so I should say a lot of this book takes place in the years before the pandemic, when we were encountering a lot of different Me Too stories. And this thing comes up several times in the book where it obliquely mentions a number of different incidents instead of one specific one. I found it really affecting. And there's actually, you know, it happens in the very beginning of the book as well. Would you be willing to read that for us?
Yeah, I'll just read like the first, you know, like five paragraphs, which are, and three of them are very, very short.
Okay.
This is the beginning of the book. "You've heard of her, I say. A challenge, an assurance, to the woman on the neighboring hotel bar stool who's made the mistake of striking up a conversation, to the dentist who runs out of questions about my kids and asks what I've been up to myself. Sometimes they know her right away. Sometimes they ask, wasn't that the one where the guy kept her in the basement? No, No, it was not. Wasn't it the one where she was stabbed in? No. The one where she got in a cab with different girl. The one where she went to the frat party. The one where he used a stick. The one where he used a hammer. The one where she picked him up from rehab and he, no. The one where he'd been watching her jog every day. The one where she made the mistake of telling him her period was late. The one with the uncle. Wait, the other one with the uncle? No. It was the one with the swimming pool. The one with the alcohol in the, with her hair around, with the guy who confessed to, right, yes. They nod, comforted. By what? My barstool neighbor pulls the celery from her Bloody Mary, crunches down. My dentist asks me to rinse. They work her name in their mouths, their memories. I definitely know that one, they say.
Oh, gives me goosebumps.
Well, thank you. So that's the prologue works that way. There are sections later on where she's basically like she's watching the news and there is this news story that's upsetting her, but she basically refuses to say which one.
Yeah.
And she's naming a million of them, you know, at the same time.
And they all start with that same, the one where, or maybe it was,
right.
Or maybe it was kind of a similar thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This came about as a solution, honestly, to me for a problem, which was that I really wanted a news story that was kind of shaking her up.
Mm.
You know, when there's that thing, when there's a story on the news that just kind of consumes you and upsets you, I didn't want to borrow a real one. I didn't want to take like the Christine Blasey Ford testimony, for instance,
sure.
Because that I wouldn't be able to do it justice. I also didn't want to make one up wholesale, you know, and then have to invent all these details for that. That would
right.
be, you know, distracting in another way. So my solution was like, okay, what if it's all of them? What if she just refuses to say, and it's just all of them at once? It's, you know, the Hollywood stuff, and it's the political, and it's the senator, and it's the Supreme Court justice, and it's and. And so it becomes kind of refrain or you know, kind of chorus throughout the book. And that prologue is a way of getting into that mode just a little bit, too.
And were those all, I assume they're all real life things that happened, right?
No.
They're not.
Some of them are. Some of them are really recognizable. Some of them are real but obscure. And then some of them I completely made up.
Okay.
And that kind of felt right to me. It's just this like, this, I didn't want them all to be recognizable. It's this idea of like, oh my God, there are just infinite ones out there. That this
Which
kind
there
of
are.
Overwhelming, yeah, this sense of like overwhelm. You know, it's the same way we end up feeling about things like mass shootings or police brutality, where there are the certain stories that stick in your memory. There are the ones that you go, oh my God, I forgot about that one. That's right. How could I forget something that horrific?
Yeah.
And then there are the ones that you just don't even have mental space for. But it's that glacial like moraine of stuff that just builds up, that weighs you down, is what I was trying to get at.
After the break, more with Rebecca Mackay on her book, I Have Some Questions For You.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
So in this book, in general, Bodhi is talking to someone, and it takes a while to figure out who. And I would love to know if that was always part of the plan. It's a super interesting device.
She returns to her high school, and she just feels like, you know, this one person is the person that she just kind of imagines watching her. I think we all have that experience, especially, for instance, if you go back to some place you haven't been in a long time, you just kind of, there's a certain person you might imagine watching you.
Mm.
Maybe it's your past self. Maybe it's someone you've lost, just someone you were there with, and you just kind of feel like they're the person you're narrating your life to, in a way.
Yeah.
Sometimes I say that and people understand right away, and sometimes I get blank stares when I say that to people, so it might not be everybody. It was not there from the very beginning. I know that. The thing is, and this is so frustrating, I don't remember exactly what happened. The thing is, you try a lot of stuff. You keep what works.
Sure.
And I know why I kept it.
Yeah.
Which is that it focuses the narrative. It allowed me to make decisions about what needed to be explained and what didn't. Yeah. And it allowed a focal point for the anger that this narrator feels looking back on the things she put up with and the things she was part of.
Yeah. So almost exactly a year ago, actually, the New York Times came out with an article called The Problem with the Pandemic Plot.
Yes.
And it was about how different authors were kind of wrestling with how and whether to include COVID in their novels. And you're quoted in it.
Right.
And you talk about how you kind of wrestled with the idea of, like, are you just slapping masks on the people in this courthouse? Because part of the novel does take place, you know, in the midst of COVID.
Yeah.
I think it's a really, you know, as someone who has read a lot of books over the last couple of years, it's fascinating to see the outcomes of that wrestling. I would just love to hear, like, how you ended up deciding what you decided to do with COVID. I think it works. I don't think you gloss over it too much. It's definitely still present.
It's there. Yeah. Well, so, you know, the first, like, three quarters of the book are set in 2018.
Right.
And then there needed to be the passage of time. And so I'm writing this in 2020, 2021, mm-hmm. and I'm going, oh, I'll just set this last part in 2022 when the pandemic will be completely over.
Right.
And I will avoid it that way. And then it's late. It's getting like late 21 and I'm editing and I'm like, crap. And I don't want to move it further into the future because who knows?
Yep.
And I can't really move it back. So I went in to this 2022 section and put face masks on everybody, and you're changing these sentences. So it's like, instead of, you know, she smiled, it's like she seemed to smile from what
crinkled.
I could tell from her. Right. Yeah. And then I was, you know, I was doing the final edits into the spring of 2022. And it's the book is really, the last part is set in March of 22. And in February of 22, New Hampshire lifted its mask mandate.
Mm.
So then I went through and I took the masks off of some people, but not others.
Right.
But a lot of my research was talking to a public defender from New Hampshire because I really wanted to get the laws right and the carceral system right and all those things.
Yeah.
And she was telling me about these clear kind of plastic masks that people would have to wear in court when they were testifying because the judge and jury wanted to see their mouth. Like just something,
makes
you know, like
sense.
I want to tell if you're lying. Yeah. So things like that, I was like, okay, I really want to keep that in. And just the delays that in getting justice that would happen because of things like COVID and the backup in the court system, it just became not a huge focus of the plot, but it is a part of the plot.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. I feel like I could talk to you for so much longer about this book, but I really appreciate your time. And it was a great read and a really fun conversation. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right, that's it for this week. As I mentioned, that was Rebecca Mackay, and her book, I Have Some Questions For You, is now out in paperback. That was the March Book Club selection for us back in 2023, which means there's also a really great discussion of that book that you can hear. If you scroll back in the feed, the episode is called Nerdette Book Club, I Have Some Questions For You Discussed. Also, speaking of Nerdette Book Club, you are always invited to participate. Our March book is Martyr by Kaveh Akbar. In April, we are reading Beautyland by Marie-Helene Bertino. Both of those books are already out. And then we've just announced in May, we are going to be reading a short story collection called A Table for Two by Amor Towles. And I'm really excited for that one as well. That comes out in early April. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. We will see you next week.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.